Welcome to Let's Talk with Dr. Batts, the show where we explore the conditions that shape healthier, safer, and more connected communities. I'm Dr. Hassan Batts, community health journalist, researcher, and storyteller. Each episode brings you honest conversations with people closest to the challenges and the solutions. From healthcare and housing to violence prevention, leadership, education, and economic opportunity, we go beyond the headlines to understand what it really takes to build communities where everyone has an opportunity to thrive. This isn't just about identifying problems. It's about building the conditions for better communities. Real talk, real people, real change. Welcome to Let's Talk with Dr. Batts. And today, we're in the studio with one of my favorite people in the whole wide world. I want our listeners and our viewers to welcome Harmony Amaya Bird. Welcome, Harmony.
Thank you.
Hello. Harmony is one of my many daughters, and she has an idea. We receive lots of emails and texts and, what do y'all call them, DMs, messages about my life, asking questions. So the idea is Harmony's going to come on and she's going to interview me. So the listeners and the viewers, I'll learn more about my life and my journey. So, Harmony, that means I'm the interesting person today, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, welcome to the show, Harmony.
Thank you.
Do you want to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself first?
Hello, I'm Harmony Bird. I'm 19, and I'm one of Dr. Hassan's best daughters. What's something people would be surprised to learn about you?
What is something that people would be surprised to learn about me?
Mm-hmm.
I used to be a cheerleader. I think that's one of the most surprising things that people learn about me. So I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, right? And we're talking about the Brooklyn of the 80s. Now our producers over there writing, do not name this episode Dr. Batts the Cheerleader, because he always comes up with these great creative names for the shows, and he's jotting that down. I grew up in Brooklyn of the 80s, and all the things that means. And I moved to the Poconos at 16 years old. My mom had a place in the Poconos, so I came out here to live with her. Went to school at Jim Thorpe High School, which is like in the middle of nowhere. There were like four black kids in the whole school. And I saw it as an opportunity to be a kid. All those shows I watched growing up, I had a chance to do that stuff, play basketball, wrestle. And I also joined the cheerleading squad, which no one ever believes. But it was a great opportunity. We used to go to competitions. There'd be like 300 girls and two guys. So it was very enjoyable experience. And it's very athletic. Cheerleading is not easy. You got to throw people up in the air, catch them on one hand. Like, it's just wild.
You was being thrown in the air?
No, I was doing the throwing. I was not being thrown in the air. See, That was a great follow-up question. You're a journalist.
How do you handle people who only know you by your past?
I don't run from my past. I think that's one of the challenges that people create in their lives. They walk and live in shame and regret and blame. I've made a lot of mistakes in life. And people who want to prevent you from growing and evolving and helping other people will always attempt to bring up your past and hold it against you. So I handle them proactively. There are no secrets in my past, so you can't weaponize it, right? Like, I mean, my shirt says prison survivor. So I'm in the gym, it says prison survivor. I'm standing on stage with the governor, it says prison survivor. But it doesn't define me. But I'm not hiding from it. I'm standing in my story, and I'm using it to change the conditions in the communities that created a lot of the challenges that I fell into.
Okay, well, speaking of prison survivor, when you came up with prison survivor or even the prison survivor network, what made you use the word survivor instead of like ex-convict?
That's a great question. So people use language like returning citizens, formerly incarcerated individuals. I know firsthand that prison is trauma, and all trauma survivors are worthy of and deserve healing. And what we experience is prison is considered earned trauma. So here's what happens. You commit a crime, you're convicted, or you take a plea, whatever it is, right? And whatever you experience post that conviction, people perceive it as you deserve it. So we're talking about abuse, we're talking about dignity violations, we're talking about economic oppression, we're talking about sexual abuse and aggression, right? People lack empathy for people that have those experiences because they look at it as part of the punishment, but it's not. So there are ways to have dignity in responsibility. So we believe that compassion and accountability can coexist. So I use the language survivor to center that you have overcome what we know to be trauma, right? And that it's not the end of your story. So it's not about surviving is not enough, right? Many of us live our lives just surviving. We support people in transitioning to thriving and building. But we want to center that idea that prison is a lonely, a dark, a depressing, and a dangerous place that has a huge impact on not just the individual that's incarcerated, but the families. You know, when you remove a father or a mother from the home, the entire family suffers. When you remove the brain drain, right? People that bring talent and brilliance and relationships from communities, the communities suffer. So when you look at dilapidated communities, when you look at poverty at, on large scales, it's impacted by mass incarceration. So we use the language survivor to say everyone is a part of this movement. You don't have to have been incarcerated. You could be a family member. You could be somebody that's an ally that cares about it. You could be someone who comes from a community that's been impacted by mass incarceration. That's the long version. That's the long answer for you.
Okay. What's the biggest challenge you face while trying to make a difference?
You know, Harriet Tubman said, you know who Harriet Tubman is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't know. You know, you guys know about Youngboy NBA and the Kardashians and stuff like that. So Harriet Tubman said that she could have saved more people had they knew that they were enslaved. So the biggest challenge is people that we support and work with are oftentimes struggling, and they don't even recognize the possibilities. Our ability as a people has been shrunk. Our ability to dream has been thwarted. So the biggest challenge is to get people to see the possibilities, to get them to overcome the limitations, to get them to know their brilliance and their sphere of brilliance and to work together. It's hard, man. You hear stories about the crabs in a barrel conversation. I think it's far worse than crabs in a barrel, right? I think it's that we're in the barrel killing each other, destroying each other, breaking each other down, and not even trying to attempt to get out. That's the biggest challenge.
What does success mean to you now than it did 10 years ago?
These are great questions. Mm-hmm. And you asked people on the internet these questions to give you questions? This whole conversation is interesting because typically when people ask me questions, my response is I ask the questions. Mm-hmm. I'm being vulnerable today and letting the world see to pull back the curtain a little bit. You said, how do I define success today different from 10 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
I would say today I'm more focused on being present with my family. I have a 3-year-old son, Hassan. I have 4 grandchildren. So my dreams are more of, and I'm 51 years old, right? So I'm on the other half of life. There's no way around that, right? So time is much more precious to me now. I think in the past, immediate change was important to me, right? Like the person I was sitting in front of, supporting them in the changes and growth that they had to work through. And now it's like time, it's about legacy, it's about generational. Everything is for the future. Like we're building wells, we're building masters and schools. We're thinking about, you know, the work that's going to follow on beyond us. 10 years ago, I was 41. So, you know, I wasn't a young whippersnapper, but I was a little younger than, and I didn't have a 3-year-old. I ain't have 4 grandchildren, right? So now every time I see my grandchildren and my son, I think about generations to come. They say every decision you make, it's just like indigenous wisdom, should take into consideration the impact of 7 generations from now. And I didn't used to understand that. I understand it today. The impact of my decisions and my relationships and my investments even. So I've become more of a philanthropist now. You know, I want to change the world on a larger, long-term scale, not just for today.
Well, what impact do you hope the Prison Survivor Network will have in 10 years?
I mean, I'm a big, bold, bodacious kind of guy. So I believe that we can eradicate mass incarceration and recidivism, right? I think that, I mean, there's a formula. There are systems to never returning to prison again. And I think if people have the support, and again, right, I always talk about the conditions. If the conditions exist where people can be successful, nobody has to go to prison. You know, what we learned in our work around economic development and like construction and gun violence prevention is if you pay someone $75,000 a year, $75,000, they won't shoot anybody. And people think that's like a miraculous discovery. It's just that simple. If people's basic needs are met, then they have an opportunity for their central nervous systems to calm when they make decisions. They, you know, I mean, you when you're hungry, tired, stressed, you don't make decisions the same way you do when your life is comfortable. So in 10 years, we will be able to really promote this idea of stabilization, stabilize people, then they can become go beyond surviving to stabilizing, then they can go to this point of thriving and to building. We want everyone thinking about what is the impact on the world on their decisions and what is the impact on the future on their decisions. You know, every time I go to ask AI a question, I think about what you guys always tell me about how it impacts the environment, the communities that I care about. And that's how we want people thinking. What's the impact of your daily decisions, your daily habits, right, on your life and health outcomes and the life and health outcomes of the people you love and the communities that you serve? So I think PSN can help do that.
Okay, and what misconceptions do people have about formerly incarcerated individuals?
Wow, this is an amazing, these are some great questions, man. You asking these questions speaks to the power of that the people have the answers, right? You put out these social media posts and you said, what do you want to know? What do you want to ask Dr. Batts? And these questions are phenomenal, man. I think the misconceptions of people that are prison survivors are that we are criminals. Having committed a crime or being convicted of a crime does not make someone a criminal, right? Like, most people will not reoffend, especially after a certain age, you know, again, right, if they reach a certain tax bracket, if they get a certain level of education, if they have a family support system. So I think people are impacted by circumstances. So when people say, well, how did you end up incarcerated? A big part of it is a series of poor choices and poor associations. And I think that that goes back to that lack of compassion, right? We don't understand adverse childhood experiences, the life experiences people have had that have impacted their decision-making, that have impacted their the way that their environment, nature versus nurture, the way that our environments have played a role in the decisions that we've made. So the misconceptions, like people are born criminals, they'll always be criminals, lock them up and throw away the key, that they just don't want to do any better. And it's, you know, oftentimes people have limited opportunities, right? And I never want to absolve myself or others from responsibility. So we need to make better decisions. However, as a society, we need to have more compassion, right? I always give the example, you know, your little sister's going into her senior year and she goes, we live in a district where she goes to one of the top performing schools, right? She never has to worry about missing a meal. So understand this. How is it that she's expected to perform at the same level as a kid that's in the projects where there's gunshots going off, where they're struggling and suffering, where dad's locked up, where mom is wrestling with depression? And that's the challenge in our society. We don't take people's realities and the conditions they live under into consideration. And that's one of the misconceptions, is that everybody should be achieving at the same level without having the same opportunities.
Within your years of working in the community and being engaged in the community, is there a story or person that you'll never forget?
Zymir Perry. I believe his mother's name was Jonisha Perry. I may have messed it up a little bit, but his Zymir Perry, I'll never forget. I read an article. She was 18 or 19 years old, and they had her picture there, Jonisha Perry, and she lost her insurance. So she lost her mental health support, and she in turn lost her medication, her therapy, everything, and her life began to spiral. And she said she felt hopeless. So she threw her baby off a bridge in Allentown, Pennsylvania, and then she jumped off the bridge. And I read that article, and it motivated me to do the work that I'm directly doing today, because I said I never want to live in a community. There was a picture of both of them, right? With this beautiful 19-year-old black girl and this beautiful baby boy that looked like me as a child, felt hopeless and would do that. And the people that talked about how great she was as a child within her family conditions, and she went into foster care, and just how things spiraled, right? So it changed me and the way that I do the work. And one time I was on stage telling this story, and a woman comes up to me and she says, Jonisha was my foster daughter. And some of the staff I was working with began to correspond with her. You know, she got a lot of time in prison, man. And I think the community failed her and her son. And I don't want to be a part of a community that fails people of promise. Whew. You're listening to Let's Talk. This is Dr. Batts. We'll be right back.
Are you saying out with the old, in with the new when it comes to your old car? WDIY's vehicle donation program will turn your ride into your favorite programs on Lehigh Valley Public Radio. The towing is free, all the paperwork is taken care of, and your gift is tax deductible. For more information, call 610-694-8100 extension 4 or visit wdiy.org.
Welcome back to Let's Talk. You're in the studio with Dr. Hassan Batts and Harmony Bird. And our guest today is my favorite person in the whole wide world. That is me. Because you're interviewing me on the show. First time ever. And it is awkward and I'm being vulnerable because our listeners and our viewers have asked so many questions. And you know, this work, I consider myself a community health journalist. It's not about being a voyeur. It's about working with and within community. So I have to be a part of the research and the conversations that are being had. So Harmony Bird, you are one of my favorite people in the whole wide world after me. So I want to thank you for taking the time to interview me. It's not easy to be on the air. It's not easy to be on camera. And I appreciate your courage. So let's go on to the next segment.
Okay. What is the biggest sacrifice you've made that nobody knows about?
I mean, I often say I could be the president of Nabisco, right? Like, I could be running a Fortune 500 company somewhere, highly successful. I get a lot of opportunities to speak, to train, to work, to coach, to do things that don't sit right for me because my people can't join. So the sacrifice is, and I don't know if I'd call it a sacrifice because the value is being is to succeed and to have so many people come with you, to change communities, to change conditions. I think our society is designed to where it's all about individualism, where you will sacrifice your people for yourself and your own success. So I would say the sacrifice I make is not selling my soul, is not jumping on every opportunity, is not seeking wealth, is not running these huge corporations so that I can create jobs, opportunity, educational opportunities, and wealth opportunities for the communities that I love.
And how do you handle criticism and negativity online?
They say don't read the comments. But I do read the comments, right? I mean, you know, everybody's going to be a Monday morning quarterback, a Monday evening quarterback. So I just, I mean, you know, I'm from the hood. Like, I'm from the hood. Like, you know, people getting their tops blown off. So when they talk about, you know, when they talk about me online, it bothers me because there's a lack of respect. Mike Tyson said that the internet has people that have never been punched in the mouth running their mouths. And that's a paraphrase, right? Mm-hmm. So people talk crazy. They're very disrespectful. They're very cruel. They're mean. And in my real life, I don't associate with mean and cruel people. I don't argue with people. So I never argue back on the internet. You know, they say if you argue with a fool, they don't know who's who. You know, Dr. John Henry Clark said, I only debate my equals. Everyone else I teach. And I always remember that, right? I don't argue with people online. And they have a lot to say. They have a lot of opinions. But it's rough sometimes. They can be mean, you know? If you got a freckle or a pimple, they're going to see it.
And what made you interested in doing a talk show?
I was invited. Yeah, I don't think that I would have been interested. We've been doing this show for about a little over four years. So podcasts weren't as popular as they are now. So I'm from a time and place where we didn't tell our business. We didn't ask a lot of questions. So I would have never imagined having a blog. But when I was invited, it was like, you know, I get to create opportunities for other people to come to share their stories. And I believe that we change communities and lives through storytelling. So by people hearing more about my story, you know, I talked to a mother earlier today, right before I came in here, her son was just arrested. And she was talking about the pain. And she said, like, his life was over. She was like, he's got a felony now. His life's over. He's not going to be able to overcome anything. And I can remind her that I'm something and someone. You know, so that's the power of storytelling. A felony does not mean your life is over. Relapsing does not mean your life is over. A bad relationship does not mean your life is over. The death of your child does not mean your life is over, right? Like the most horrific things, you're in a car accident and you know, or you have to have something amputated. It does not mean your life is over. And when you hear people share their successes and their surviving and their overcoming and their resilience in similar circumstances, I think it strengthens your spirit. So that's what a talk show is for me. A talk show is an opportunity to bring people on that have been shot 5 times, that have been divorced, that have been incarcerated, that have been in mental health hospitals, that have started billion-dollar businesses, as a reminder to others of the possibility and the strength of the human resolve.
Who has been your favorite guest on the show?
I would say my favorite guest has been Walter Beach. This is Elder Walter Beach. He's a former Detroit Lion football player. He's a warrior. He was the training director, I think, at Rikers Island. He is a father, a grandfather, a mentor to me, someone who I need to spend a lot more time with. He's 95 years old, and every time I talk to him, you know, when people say, if you would ask me, who would you like to be in 95? I want to be Walter Beach the third. Walter Beach the third is his title. And I had him on the show, and he's just a wealth of knowledge, as always. He's one of my favorite people to speak to listen to.
Who do you dream of having on the show in the future?
As much as I love Walter Beach, I would pass him up for Mike Tyson. Listen, you know I love Mike Tyson. If I could have Mike Tyson across from me, because again, right, like he's overcome so much and he's recreated himself. So I believe that human beings have the opportunity to do just that through honesty and transparency. He's from Brooklyn. I'm from Brooklyn. I grew up, you know, watching Mike Tyson fight. I used to fight a lot as a kid. They used to call me Mike Tyson, man. So I just, we had some shared friends that are no longer with us. So I would love to interview him. That's probably the only person I can think I would want. AOC, I'd want to interview also. What is her name? Alexandria Ocasio. I think AOC, she's the congresswoman from New York City, from the Bronx. And she's just a powerhouse. She's just phenomenal.
And what's one thing your daughters know about you that your followers don't?
I don't know. One thing my daughters know about me, though, that I'm the funniest person ever. I have a great sense of humor. Would you agree? My wife always says, and I would imagine you guys would say, you know, if people really knew how you were behind closed doors. Like, so I just got a great sense of humor. People think I'm mean. I think that's the biggest mm-hmm. misconception about me. Like, when people describe me, when people meet me, they say, I thought you were so much bigger in person. Or they'll say, like, when they describe me like 6'8" and like 300 pounds of all muscle. And like, I'm this big, mean dude. You know, and y'all know, like, I'm just a teddy bear. I'm loving. I'm funny. I like to laugh. I like to enjoy my family. I like to be with my friends. But seriously, like people, even when they meet me out, they always say, you never smile. People that love me say, I always smile. I would think James, you see me smile all the time. I would think, James, like I crack jokes. They might be corny, but you know I'm going to be light and easy going. But that's not the narrative that people have created around me, right? So here's what y'all know that the world doesn't know. I got it, that I'm a huge introvert. So people see me at the gym or out the grocery store at an event and I'm not talking and they think it's something wrong. But y'all know, he just laid back. I could walk through the woods alone all day. I could spend all day alone unless I'm with the people that I love. And I think, and that's not just about me, right? I think people judge people that they misunderstand, that enjoy their own company. It's not that I don't like you, it's that I like me and that I got a lot of thoughts. I got a lot going on in my mind. That was a long answer for you.
If people could remember you for one thing, what would it be?
It's back to what Mama Bash used to tell me. She said, when you put half the energy into doing good that you put into doing wrong, you're going to change the world. I want to be remembered for changing the world. I want to be remembered for helping people, and not only on an individual level, for really being courageous and bold and attacking conditions and systems and not just yelling and screaming, working within them and with the people being at the lead to change communities and the world ultimately.
Was there a specific moment when you just realized, like, I wanted to change my life?
I always say, man, you watch these shows like Coach Carter. I ain't have no Coach Carter in my life. I didn't have no love interest that told me give up the streets and, you know, or else it's over. It was a series of moments and decisions, you know, and that's the advice that I offer to anyone that's struggling with anything, any bad habits, whether it's weight, whether it's substances, whether it's crime, whether it's violence, you know, whether it's toxic relationships or toxic traits. It doesn't happen overnight. It's the habits that you contribute to every day. It's the things you do everything. It's the dreams that you see for yourself. And I just had to start seeing myself in different spaces and different places. That's the first thing. And then the second one is the association. I started to really surround myself with people that were where I needed to be. And that's whether it's academically, that's whether it's professionally, that's whether it's in terms of sobriety, whether it's in terms of crime, of healthy relationships, you know. I'm not going with my guys to Colombia, and they're always trying to get me to go with them. And I love Colombia. I would go to Colombia with my family for a trip, you know, excursion like that. But I'm not going to do what they're doing. So that's how I started to make good, healthy decisions and surround myself with the right people.
And with everything you've been through in life, what do you think your purpose is?
My purpose is to do that, to survive, to let people know that it's not over. As long as I wake up and I'm breathing and I've got my faculties, I'm going to take my swims. Mama Bass used to say it when Nemo came out, just keep swimming. So before Saving Nemo, whatever, Finding Nemo came out, she would say, keep swinging, you know, like, because I used to be a little kid in the hood and, you know, get in fights or get jumped. She just keep swinging, just keep swinging. And then when Nemo came out, she would always say, just keep swimming, just keep swimming. And then she loved Forrest Gump. She would say, run, Forrest, run. Like, she would always remind me of these action, these verbs, right? Like, just keep going, don't quit. And when I was a little kid, she used to say, you think you're a shark, that if you stop swimming, you'll die. Because I wouldn't rest. You know, now when I sit down, I fall asleep. That's the old man stuff. As soon as I sit down, I start snoring. But it was a time, like Hassan, right? My son, he don't stop. He's nonstop. So just keep going. That's what I'm here for, to survive, man, to show people that as long as you wake up in the morning, yeah, you overcame some rough things. Yeah, you lost some people. Yeah, you had some challenges. Yeah, you took some lumps. But you're going to get yours back. Just keep swimming. Just keep swinging. Just keep running. Just keep giving it your all, man. When you get up to plate, you swing. When they hand you the microphone, you got to say something. You got to say something. You got to scream. Don't get shy. I have major anxiety, and I get on stage in front of thousands of people, and my underarm sweat and my voice cracks, but I'm going to speak while my voice is cracking because I got to say something. You got to scream when they give you the mic. Even if I get up, then I just say, shout out to Brooklyn. And the crowd laughs, and then the rest comes out, man. That's what I want to leave the world with. Don't leave nothing in the tank. All gas. That's what y'all say, right? 10 toes down, step on the feet on the gas, man.
That's all my questions.
That's all your questions. All right, I got a question for you. What's the last book you read?
The last book I read? I don't know.
Okay. What are you listening to right now?
What am I listening to? I listen to SZA, Summer Walker.
Okay. Oh, this is all R&B love stuff. You in love?
No.
Okay. What shows are you watching?
I'm watching Outer Banks. I'm watching Euphoria.
See, I don't know any of those shows. What's your favorite movie of all time?
My favorite movie of all time? The Wood.
Oh, that's a classic. That's from your mom. That's a classic. Your mom was my first wife, right? All right. Close us out. Tell our audience how you would describe me.
I would describe you as a loving, genuine person, an open ear. You be trying to judge on the low, but it's okay.
Is that what you call it?
Yeah, judging. You definitely judge, but just a big ball of energy and love.
There you go. Have Harmony Bird in the studio with us. I'm Dr. Hassan Bass. We thank you for joining us. The love of my life. I love you, Harmony. Thank you for stepping outside your comfort zone and doing this interview. Shout out to our producer, James 11, award-winning, the best producer in the business, better than Just Blaze, better than Eminem, all, I know they're radio producers, but better than all of them, man. DJ Khaled, this is my guy. You know, we will see you again next time on Let's Talk. Thank you for joining us.